Hello and welcome to this audio program titled Dog Training Secrets Revealed. My name is Anthony Pachalka and shortly I'll be introducing you to Basil Theophanides, a prominent professional dog trainer who will be sharing with you the solutions for successful management of many common dog behavior problems. Dog ownership brings with it many wonderful things, such as companionship, fun and exercise, and has even been shown to be beneficial to one's long-term health. But unfortunately for many dog owners, this experience can be tainted by a dog who exhibits one or more of the many possible dog behavior problems which we will cover on this audio, such as excessive barking, biting, nipping and general aggressiveness, excessive chewing, toilet training problems, separation anxiety, food issues such as refusing to eat or the fussy, finicky food eater, difficulty in walking on a leash, poop eating, and introduction of a second dog into the household. Also covered will be dog socialization, crate training, choosing a dog with a good temperament, tips for safe travel with your pet, understanding the pack leader mentality, plus much, much more. Basil will cover all these issues just mentioned and provide a good understanding of why these behaviors occur in the first place, how you can recognize them, and importantly, how you can successfully manage these problems. Let's move on to Basil now. Basil Theophanides is training director and founder of Command Dog Training School, one of the largest and most successful professional dog training schools in Melbourne. Basil has been a nationally accredited trainer for 25 years, and his experience includes the successful completion of a dog trainer instructor course, the establishment of a security firm specializing in man and dog teams, which included the training of security dogs. In the 80s, Basil developed a demonstration team of German Shepherd dogs and their handlers, which conducted regular displays for the general public. Basil has also and continues to be involved in the successful training of countless breeds of dogs with their owners in obedience and behavior problem-solving classes. Today, Basil remains the training director of Command Dog Training School, which began operating over 18 years ago. Basil has appeared on many radio and TV programs and is an absolute wealth of knowledge on all aspects of dog training. It is with great pleasure that I introduce you now to Basil Theophanides. Hello, Basil.
Hello, Anthony. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Hello.
I thought we might start with, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in dog training and what you're currently doing.
Yeah, certainly. Command Dog Training School is the company that we own, and it's been operating since about the mid-80s. My training career spans probably about 25 years when I first started with an organisation called Command Breeders Foundation here in Australia. And the Command Breeders Foundation was an organisation that bred German Shepherd dogs and then donated these dogs to the service, the various services such as customs, police, guide dogs and so on. So I was heavily involved with that in a voluntary capacity. So we tended to puppy walk dogs, bring them up for 12 months,
okay,
and donate them. And so that's where it all sort of began, more of out of an interest, and then it developed into a full-time business.
Okay, and can you just briefly an overview what your current business is doing at the moment?
Certainly. Command Dog Training School provides a variety of services to the general public. Pet dog training is a primary aspect of our business. So we cover kindergarten puppy classes, puppies from 8 weeks to 14 weeks of age, which is foundation laying training. We run basic obedience courses for older dogs, anywhere from 5 months and up, and we take actually dogs in even up to 7 or 8 years of age for these courses. It's more really handler education than dog training as such. We run intermediate to advanced classes, which includes agility training, flyball training, scent training, and also we run student trainer courses. We provide structured programs for people that want to become dog training instructors.
I see. So it's quite a varied business structure.
It is.
Would you mind telling us a bit about just basic dog psychology, a little bit about how dogs learn and I mean, a lot of people are really unsure how much a dog can learn and what ages, you know, you really should start teaching your dog anything.
Look, a lot of people don't realise that you can actually teach young puppies, I'm talking about baby puppies from 8 weeks of age, and you can teach them a hell of a lot, particularly during the imprinting period, which is up to 16 weeks. Most people get a puppy from a breeder at about 8 weeks of age, and, you know, the vets may say, look, don't take this dog out until it's, you know, had its all its shots, which is actually counterproductive because you've missed the best opportunity to develop this puppy as a well-adjusted dog in the future. So we run these puppy programs to educate people in developing behaviour patterns for puppies, developing sound temperament so the puppies are not nervous or distrustful, also teaching puppies basic commands like come, sit, lie down and stay, and it's very basic for a young puppy up to 16 weeks, and we use food reward and positive reinforcement methods. But we also do quite a lot of interaction and sociability training with the young pups. So what that means is it teaches puppies to interact with other people, other dogs, and so it doesn't have any nervousness or timidity towards them when they're older.
Right.
So that's your starting point.
Okay, so in that early period is obviously very important then, and that would be the socialisation period you're talking about?
Yes, that's correct. It's the imprinting period. So anything that happens to the puppy, good or bad or otherwise, can impact permanently on the puppy's character. So let's say, for example, if you don't interact that puppy or socialise it or take it out and explore the outside world before 16 weeks, then you'll end up with a very nervous and distrustful sort of a pup, which is not what you want. So that's the key. The key is to get that puppy out virtually straight away.
So what about the people who buy their pet, you know, a little bit older, 1 year,
yes,
5, 6 years old? Does that mean learning or teaching their dog something is going to be more difficult?
It can be. It depends on whether we've got a dog with a sound temperament. Let's presume that the dog has got a good temperament. Dogs are pack animals, which means that they look for a pack leader in any environment they live in. Now, if you take on that leadership role and you go to training and train that dog in obedience, the dog looks up to you as a pack leader and wants to please you. And that's the main aspect of all dog training, is the dog realising that it is at the bottom of the pecking order in terms of that the way it views the whole household, and the pack leader is obviously the human part that forms his family, and he wants to please that human.
Right.
And that's important. If you don't have that balance in that way, you end up with problems.
So if someone's looking at buying a dog and they go around and you know, have to check the dog out, might be 1 or 2 years old, is there any way they can determine temperament? I imagine it would be very difficult in a short period of time to get a sense of, will this dog have problems or learn easily or with difficulty?
What I would be doing is saying to them, look, first of all, if it's at a kennel environment or perhaps one of the shelters, you take the dog out, if you can, for a walk within the shelter on a leash, and just see how it responds to leash, see how it responds to the family, if it's outgoing, if it's happy to see you, if it's the sort of dog that sort of cringes or isn't forthcoming, it's probably not the sort of dog you want. By the same token, if the dog comes out and he's jumping all over the place and he's really hard to control, a lot of people tend to get put off by that. But really, it just simply means the dog hasn't been taught not to do these things.
Right.
So you can, what you need is an outgoing, happy dog, one that perhaps likes to chase balls, that is happy with the family. By taking him for a walk, you can actually get a good feel for that.
Right. Oh, that's very interesting. You mentioned before, your training method is using positive reinforcement and reward.
For kindergarten, for puppies, it is absolutely 100%.
Okay, can you just briefly explain what that means?
Because puppies, you need to develop puppies' character and temperament so they're confident. So you shouldn't use really any compulsive methods, any harsh methods. So what we do is we shape a puppy's behaviour by using food, and we lure the puppy into an exercise, into a position. Simple thing to do, for example, is teaching puppy to sit. Common thing to do is to take a little tidbit in your fingers, let the puppy smell the food, and of course then it's focused on the food, and all you do is you simply move the food in an upwards motion, and the puppy's going to look up, and he's naturally going to sit to be able to look up at where the food is. Now, if the puppy starts to jump at the food, you don't move, you just stand there with the food in one position until finally he gives up and he'll just put his bottom on the ground. And as soon as he does that, you reward him with the food. And it takes about 2 or 3 times of doing that before he makes the connection of, oh, I see, if I
get some food, yes.
And only once you've shaped that behaviour do you then bring a command in, but not before.
And would that reward be used for all types of training or more just for the younger
dogs? Well, look, mainly for the younger dogs. We do use a little bit of food in our basic obedience classes, but we use what we call an eclectic method, eclectic meaning a blend of methods. You can't just simply pigeonhole your training and say, right, I'm only going to use food because that's the only way, which is nonsense. Not every dog is interested in food. So we use a little bit of food, we use play training in our lessons with our older dogs, and we also use a little bit of corrective training, meaning if the dog does something wrong and he understands the word no, which you teach him, then you say to him, no, you've done the wrong thing more or less, and then you guide the dog into the action you want the dog to do. So it might be simply sitting, teaching the dog to sit by pulling up on the leash and pushing down his hind quarter. And then the reward is the praise and the pat, not necessarily always the food.
I see.
But one thing about dogs, if I can just add, Anthony, is that
yes,
too many people tend to communicate to these dogs as though they're human beings. And so a good example of this would be, they come home, they found the dog's dug a big hole, and they look up the dog and they say, you naughty dog, what have you done? Of course, the dog's starting to cower and a little bit unsure, his ears go back. So the dog owner immediately thinks, oh, yes, look, he's got a guilty look, he knows. But in fact, he doesn't know. What he's reacting to is the body language and the vocal sounds that person is making, which is threatening. As a consequence, the dog just lowers himself to show submissiveness. And the owner, thinking in human terms, thinks, oh, he understands. But dogs actually need to be caught in the act of the misdeed before they realise that they're doing something wrong. So you can't correct the dog afterwards.
So punishing a dog... you come home from work, you find a puddle on the floor, taking the dog over and putting their nose near that puddle and yelling at the dog won't serve any purpose.
No, it'll just simply serve to confuse the dog and make the dog very unsure of your actions and your motives. And the next day when you come home, the dog's going to start looking a little bit unsure of you again. The same cycle continues. People just get the wrong impressions.
Well, we've mentioned toilet training briefly. We might go into that a bit more. That seems to be a question, or probably one of the most important questions a lot of owners have. They've got nice carpets inside, but they don't want dogs peeing on the floor.
No, that's right.
So where would someone start?
All right. The second you get your puppy home, the first thing you would really need to do is, you've obviously had a drive, and you pick the puppy up and you take him into the backyard where you would like him to go to. Let him go to the toilet. Be patient. And when he goes, just quietly, oh, he's a good puppy, very good. Now, once he's actually marked that area, you can bring the puppy inside and just observe. But you need to restrict the puppy. Don't just give him run of the house. So you restrict the puppy and just observe him when you bring him immediately inside. When the puppy starts to sniff around a little bit, you start to think, well, hang on, I think he's going to go again. So you quickly pick him up, you take him outside to the same spot, and you say to him, hurry up, or busy, busy, or toilet. And then when he goes, you praise him. So that's the first procedure. Then, when the puppy's settled a little bit and he's had something to eat or drink, you take him immediately out because he's going to want to go. If he's had a bit of a play with you, then take him outside straight away. You need to be very, very regular with a young puppy. So that means on the hour, every hour, even maybe twice in an hour, you might have to take him outside.
So that's right throughout the day, every half to 1 hour.
Mm. It sounds onerous, but that is the fact, and that's the way you have to do it with a young puppy in the first few days. One other thing, too, is that if you can't supervise the puppy, then you need to put him somewhere where, if he does soil, it doesn't really matter. And that could mean that you put him outside for a little while, or if you have him inside with you, you might just tie him up next to you so he can't go wandering. And then when he starts to cry, you'll know he wants to go to the toilet. So you take him outside in that instance. And he starts to recognise that, well, if I whine a little bit, I know that I'll be able to go to the toilet. You can do a similar thing at night. You can either tie him up next to your bed, so that way if he does start to cry, he wants to go, and you take him outside. Or the quickest way is to crate train the dog, crate train the puppy.
I'd like to hear a bit more about crate training, Basil.
Crate training is a great way and a very fast way of teaching puppies not to soil. What you do is and I did this with my German Shepherd puppy about 3 years ago. First time I ever used a crate, I have to be honest, because I really didn't think much of them, but I thought I'd give it a shot. And I crated the puppy right from the word go, which means that you have those little transport crates, the collapsible ones, or you can use just the plastic ones. You put the dog's or the puppy's bed inside there, and you leave the gate open. You don't lock the dog in there or lock the puppy in there.
Oh, so the dog's not locked completely in
Correct.
The crate.
That's right. It's got to be a positive thing, not negative. So the puppy's used to going inside. He's got the smell of his bed in there, and you give him a little chew toy, so he's, you know, happy to just lie down there. And you observe him. Now, he'll probably just go in there quietly and have a chew, and then he'll be able to wander out, and that's when you pick him up and take him outside, and then you bring him back again. Then he'll learn to wander in himself. And when he goes to sleep in the crate on his own, then you quietly close the door to the crate. Now, when he wakes up, what's he going to do? He's going to cry. That's your signal. You open the door, you take him outside. So he hasn't had a chance to actually get out and wander on his own volition and just do it anywhere. And so the imprinting is such that he cries, he knows the gate will open, he goes outside of the toilet, come back in, and you let him go back into the crate if he wants.
So I imagine it's quite important that you place that crate in a position, particularly overnight, so you can hear those cries in the morning.
That's right. And what you would do in the first instance, over the first couple of nights, is put the crate right next to your bedroom, you know, right next to your bed, actually. And when he cries, he might cry because he's a bit unsure, and so you would just quietly console him and just put your hand there, let him sniff your hand, and he goes back to sleep. But then when he starts to cry too much, then you know he has to go. That's when you take him outside, go to the toilet, bring him back in, close him inside the crate, and then he'll go back to sleep.
And how long would you imagine this would need to continue,
Basil? It depends on the puppy and in the individual. It took me 3 nights to toilet train my shepherd puppy.
Wow.
And then after that, he was fine.
3 nights, that's
three
amazing.
Nights. That's it.
And is there a difference between younger dogs and an older dog that hasn't been toilet trained that you've
Correct.
Just got?
Correct. There is a huge difference. Some people ring me up and say, look, I've got an older dog, and he's... I need to get my dog toilet trained. And I think to myself, it's probably just a little puppy, but in fact it's, you know, 12 months or over. And what they've done is they've just simply put up with having to clean, and it's come to a head. But by that stage, it's too late because the dog is so used to it. So it would mean that you would have to really take some strong steps to change the dog's behaviour around the home, and you would have to tie him up so he couldn't just wander around. You would have to crate him, and it's a hard slog.
So it's really going back to square one, treating that older dog like a puppy.
That's
almost.
Exactly right, and a lot of people don't want to do that. It's too hard.
And would you expect good results doing that? Or is it quite varied depending on the age of the dog?
It depends on the dog and also the dog's owner, how serious they are about it and how consistent they are. And the other thing is, too, if you have other members in the household, that like children perhaps, or just, you know, brothers, sisters, whatever, and if they're not all doing it the same way, then that will set you back in your training.
Because it's just going to confuse the dog.
Correct.
What about the people who have a 9-to-5 job? So they're off to work in the morning. It's going to be 8 hours. Should they be leaving their dog crated with the door open?
Well, this is the thing. The crate should only be done under supervision, so when you are actually at home. And I understand what you're saying. Should you leave the crate open? Well, that's just simply going to mean the dog's going to wander around
the house.
Inside. My feeling would be, if you're in an apartment situation, then what you should do is get a little child's playpen.
Okay.
You put the puppy or the dog in the child's playpen, and you probably have to have a little litter box, like a kitty litter, and teach the dog to go to that area.
Oh, okay. So you can use it just like a cat's litter
tray. Exactly. Yeah. And that would be probably the best way of doing it if the dog requires toilet training to stop it stalling inside. The majority of dogs, if they're clean, they can still hang on.
So they can wait that 8 hours.
Well, if you take them out to the toilet in the morning, they're pretty right.
Basil, what about pads? Some people mention they've used soiling pads.
Yep.
Have you had any experience with that?
That's a hit and miss. I think it's just an expensive proposition to keep buying these soiling pads. I can't see why you couldn't just use just a tray and put just old newspaper in there. I don't believe in using newspaper as toilet training, but in an apartment situation, there's no problem with that because you're teaching the dog to use the tray. So the pads, you know, it's a bit of a hit and miss whether they're going to use them or not.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's quite a interesting approach there and some very useful information. Is there anything else we should add to toilet training before we move on?
Certainly. A lot of people tend to leave food and water overnight for their dogs. They don't need it. Just remove the food and the water. You'll find they're not going to get up in the morning, in the middle of the night, I should say, and have a drink or a feed, and then decide to go to the toilet in the middle of the night. So that's the next thing they need to look at.
Okay.
And also regular feeding time. So if you're the sort of person that likes to allow your dog to graze, in other words, you put your food down and then, you know, let the dog come and go as he pleases eating, then the dog's going to have irregular soiling patterns, and you'll end up always having to clean up. But if you feed him at one point in the day, this is the older dog, then the dog will have a regular soiling pattern, and then it's easy to sort of work out, well, he's going to go to the toilet at this time, take him out for his walk, go to the toilet, bring him back in, and you're fine.
Terrific. Is there any major difference in breeds for someone who's looking at buying a dog? Like, is there a breed out there that is just difficult to toilet train? Does anything stand out?
Yes,
or?
I'd say from our experience, Maltese, Maltese crosses, Bichons, Bichon Frises, can also be difficult. A lot of the smaller lap type of dogs, only because I think people tend to mollycoddle them too much.
Okay, so it's probably treating them like a human, like you mentioned before, like a baby, and almost expecting them to wee like a baby would.
Correct. It's just amazing how people will actually treat their dogs in that sense.
Okay, well, we might move on, Basil, to another problem a lot of people have, a dog who's barking excessively.
Yes. Okay, reasons why a dog barks. In the society that we live in now, a lot more people are becoming intolerant of dogs, full stop. The slightest bark is going to set people off and say, well, you know, this dog barks all day. But there's a couple of things that people need to do, or dog owners, to prevent the barking issue. Dogs bark because they're bored, because they're not getting enough stimulation during the day, they're not exercised regularly, they don't have enough companionship, or they're just simply suspicious of noises, and therefore they'll bark. So to alleviate that, dog owners need to do one thing first, that is train that dog to be an obedient dog. So the dog looks up to the owner as a pack leader and respects that person as a pack leader and wants to please that person. Secondly, daily walks, to be able to give the dog extra stimulation. A lot of people say to me, but I've got a big backyard and he's got all these toys. So the answer I have to them is that, well, gee, you know, you've got a big house, but would you like to be locked up in that house day in, day out?
Exactly.
The answer
right.
Is no. You go stir crazy like a dog would. So the dog does need to get that stimulation outside of that environment. And then the next thing is the dog needs quality time with the other members of the family. And this is where people need to learn to bring their dogs inside when they are at home, and teach them to go to their bed and on their mat in the same room that they're at, rather than just simply wandering around. And so they're still getting that contact and that companionship and that quality time with that dog owner, rather than 24 hours, the owner spends 1 hour with the dog because he feeds the dog and he walks the dog, and then the rest of the time the dog's in the backyard.
So it's little wonder you've got a barking dog.
Well, that's right, exactly. So there's all these things that can create anxiety in dogs, and they end up barking because it's an outlet for them.
Do you have a few more tips on becoming your dog's pack leader? Because that seems like it's a very important point.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, you need to do the obedience training, because that essentially shows clearly the dog has to carry out those exercises for you and get the reward from the owner. Other things, teaching the dog not to pull on the leash, that's all part of obedience, because pulling means the dog wants to guide you or lead you wherever it wants to go. Things such as the dog wanting to rush in every time you open the door, and you just sort of going, okay, well, he can come in now, and you open the door, and the dog rushes in and does as he pleases. To stop that, what you need to do is open the door just a little bit, close it, open, close, so the dog hasn't got a chance to rush in. Once the dog stops trying to rush in because you're just opening and closing the door, then you give the dog a command, such as inside, and you guide him by using a treat or a pig's ear or something, guide him to his bed, and then you say, on your bed, goes to his mat, you praise him, so that's a positive thing, let him have his chew thing for about 5 minutes, and then you take him by the collar and you lead him outside and say, outside. So you're essentially dictating to the dog the terms of him coming inside.
Mm-hmm,
other things, teaching him not to hang around the table when you're eating food, eating first and feeding the dog second, not allowing the dog to go through the door before you do.
I mean, I think
only
that
allowing
point
the dog to come in when you give him a command.
Sure.
And all these sorts of things will lead to you becoming more the pack leader.
So you mentioned feeding your dog after yourself. I think a lot of owners would probably find that surprising, because
that's right. Because
what
you're trying
first
to do is establish clearly that, well, as a pack leader, you get to feed first. In the wild situation, that's what would happen. The pack leader would eat, and the scraps would be left amongst the rest of the pack to fight for them. So it's a little thing, and it may or may not have an impact, but if you're having a pack leadership issue, then you need to consider that. In normal situations, wouldn't make any difference.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, further along the line of the barking dog, what about a dog that's it's more than just barking, it's an aggressive dog, maybe biting or nipping visitors or possibly even the owner?
Okay. If the dog, I'll give you some cases in point. There was a lady that I went to see just recently. She had a French bulldog. And she said that her mother rang up really concerned because the French bulldog bit her daughter, who was the dog's owner. She's 19 years of age. And they were concerned because the dog was aggression towards them as well. So I went and had a look and had a look at this dog, and he was just quite a normal outgoing French bulldog, quite a nice dog in fact. And the bottom line was that she had mollycoddled this dog from a puppy, allowed to sleep on the bed, allowed every time the dog wanted attention she'd pick it up, the dog slept on the couch on their lap, and now if the dog jumped on their lap and they tried to get up or move, the dog would growl.
Oh, really?
As if to say, no, you're not going to move me. And so they reacted by sitting back in the chair. So this is sending all the wrong signals to this dog that, well, you are in charge. And so then what happened was she chased the French bulldog and it ran under the bed because it had something in its mouth. And she went to get it from under the bed. And, of course, the dog's cornered. So he acts in a defensive way and he bit her on the hand. And that was basically the catalyst for her calling us and me coming out to see her. What it was, the dog was simply pack leader. And he was going to tolerate any misbehaviour by his lower members of the pack, which is the humans of the family. So to change all that, we had to, first of all, establish clearly in the person's mind, the dog owner's mind, that they had to have strength and a strong heart and be firm with this dog and correct the dog and do obedience training with him and not put up with this nonsense. And that took about 5 or 6 weeks of one-on-one training to build the confidence back in the dog's owner. And then also to clearly perceive that dog owner as being the pack leader. That's one instance. Another instance would be dogs nipping the ankles and things like that, usually because they're a bit fearful, a little bit nervous, a little bit distrustful. And in that situation, again, the only way you're going to rectify it or try to control it is through obedience training. These dogs don't respond to their owner's commands, so they just keep getting away with it. So the bottom line is the dog owner has to take on that leadership role and show this dog, no, I'm not going to put up with this nipping. You're not going to do that. I'm pack leader. I'll protect you. You don't have to protect me.
So that takes acknowledgement by the owner that there is a problem and some commitment to actually put the work in to change it.
That's right. And sometimes this is the difficulty, Anthony, where the dog owners, they just don't have the heart to be firm with their dogs because it's their little baby.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, that is why we have a lot of problems with dogs, which could have been avoided.
Okay. We might move on. You mentioned briefly a dog who's left at home, separation anxiety, that barking could be one of the outlets for that dog.
Yes.
Do you mind talking a bit more about separation anxiety?
Sure. Separation anxiety is often misdiagnosed, but it's where a dog shows anxiety by shaking when the owner leaves, barking incessantly, drooling, but it displays these behaviours even prior to the owner leaving. The owner will be going through a routine to go to work, for example, or to go out, such as putting makeup on if the owner's a woman, or if it's a man, putting aftershave on or shaving or doing whatever. And then they'll get their car keys, they'll get their bag or whatever they're taking with them. And all these are cues for the dog to start getting nervous because the dog knows that each one of these is getting closer to the person leaving.
Right.
The person goes out the door, the owner makes a big fuss of the dog, goes out the door, the dog's left in hyped up state, and then starts to get distraught and starts to pace and salivate, and some dogs can actually make themselves sick. They'll throw up. Now, if you've got a dog like that, you really need to have a two-pronged approach. You may have to look at, first of all, medical intervention. So you may have to take it to the vet. And the vet can diagnose if the dog is showing this nervousness as well, or this anxiety. And the vet may prescribe a product called Clomicalm, which is like a human Valium.
Right.
And that in conjunction with desensitisation training. And the desensitisation, I mean, is whilst the dog is on this Clomicalm, you would then, as a trainer, advise the dog owner to disappear for short periods of time. And I'm talking about half a minute.
Oh, about. Okay, short as that.
Yeah, exactly. And you have mm-hmm. to build up from those little steps then to big steps. And then maybe up to minutes, 5 minutes, and so on and so on. So you can see what we're getting at. We're desensitising the dog to all these things happening. But also, you have to change the dog's perception of, you know, picking up the car keys and the dog starts to get stressed. Pick the car keys up and put them down again, but don't go anywhere. You know, go to the bathroom and start getting ready, but just sit down and watch TV. So the dog doesn't think that each of these actions means he's going to, you know, the dog owner's going to disappear.
Right, so changing
the
cues.
But also, take on that leadership role. And again, obedience training. Get control of the dog. Give the dog direction. The dog's going to feel a lot more confident in that it's actually doing work for you, such as sitting and staying, and confident that you are in charge and everything's going to be okay. But it's only when people, oh, you poor little thing, I won't be long.
That's just making the problem worse.
That's right. So, two-pronged thing, medical intervention in some cases with the use of Clomicalm or other products, and of course, desensitisation training. There's also a product called a DAP, which I only found out recently. It's called a dog-appeasing pheromone. And I think, I'm not sure exactly, that this is a scent that you spray that's been manufactured to simulate the mother's milk. And so it has a calming effect on dogs.
I see.
And so you spray that on the bedding and that can also make the dog a lot calmer. The other thing is too, if you are leaving, put something of your scent on the dog's bed. It could be just an old, you know, dirty jumper or something. Or your dirty underwear for that matter. but the scent is there and the dog feels a lot more calm.
Would it be worthwhile leaving a radio on or anything? Or
yes and no. I mean, that may help, it may not, but it's more the fact that the dog is looking for the owner, the physical part of the owner, to be there.
Would introducing a second dog into the family
it can
abuse?
Help, but if the dog, depends on how stressed this dog is, how nervous this dog is. If the dog is so stressed that even when it sees dogs, it can't relate to them, then it's not really necessarily going to work either.
Right.
But sometimes I would recommend, we use a company called DogZone, D-O-G-Z-O-N-E. DogZone is a daycare centre for dogs here in Melbourne, and we refer people that have got severe cases of this separation anxiety to send their dogs there during the day and then pick them up at the end of the day. So the dog is mixing with other dogs and also with people, and that, over a period of time, it's amazing how less stressed this dog is because he's getting extra stimulation and companionship. But if they're really nervous, it takes something like weeks before the dog settles finally and then goes into a routine there and is quite happy.
Right. Oh, terrific. So we might just move on to a couple of food issues.
Sure.
Firstly, just the dog begging for food. He's always around at the kitchen table. Yes. Is there any way to stop that other than just locking your dog up at meal times?
Quite simple. Don't feed him at the table. Dogs learn by association. People give them a little tidbit, don't think it's any problem. All it takes is once, twice, and the dog has picked up that as a signal and as a habit. Again, it comes down to the dog owners setting up parameters and guidelines for these dogs and saying, no, whilst we're having dinner, you can be in the same room, stay on your mat. Again, what does it come down to? Obedience training, getting control, vocal control. When you say no, the dog understands that. When you say stay, the dog understands that. So if you put him on his mat and you say drop, and you say stay, and then you go have your dinner, and the dog's allowed to get up. So that's what it boils down to.
Right. So a lot of these issues are boiling down to not spoiling your dog too much. And obviously you want to love your dog, but if you
that's
love
right.
them unconditionally without teaching them anything, they're going to go off the rails.
That's right. Yep, exactly. You really have to, first of all, provide the dog. You can give the dog love and all that, and the dog will still love you as such. But it may not respect you if you don't start establishing yourself as being the pack leader and teaching the dog to do various things for you.
Okay. What about the dog who's refusing to eat? A meal's put down in front of them, they sniff it, have a bite and walk away.
Well, let's presume the dog is healthy and he's not suffering from any ailment which, you know, robs his appetite. And you do this and then you put the food down, the dog just goes, oh, look, not really interested. then what you do is you take the food away after 15 minutes and he skips that meal. The next time round, you put the same food out again. 15 minutes after that, he doesn't eat it, he skips that meal. One thing about dogs, they are pretty resilient animals. They are not going to starve to death if you don't feed them for 2 or 3 days. I mean, in the wild, they can probably go without food for weeks. So what you do is you let it go, and you give it up to even 3 days before you then may have to look at changing what you're feeding the dog. But again, changing, you've got to look at what you're going to change to. My suggestion is to look at a super premium dog product. There's a lot of good dog products. We use Nature's Gift dog food. It's a canned food. However, it's cooked in the can. There's no preservatives or additives. There's no byproducts. An exceptionally good product. And it's all a balanced diet as well, because they control the amount of fat and what vitamins go in there.
And where should people look for premium foods? At a local pet store or
Yeah,
or vets?
Usually the super premium foods. Well, the Nature's Gift you can get from supermarkets. You can get other products as well, like dry food products such as Advance, which is an extremely good dry food product, super premium product. You can get that usually from pet shops, vets, and places like Dog Zone, for example.
Okay, terrific. The last issue there in regard to eating is poop eating. A dog eating their own poop or another dog's poop?
Coprophagy. That's the clinical term, coprophagy.
Sounds much nicer than poop eating.
It's actually taken from the Greek word kopia, which is feces, and phagia, which is food.
Right.
So coprophagy is something that young dogs will tend to do because they're just curious. They just go, oh, this is interesting, I might just have a bit of a taste of that. But what can happen, though, is they can develop a habit, and so you need to break that habit as soon as possible. That means as soon as you know the dog's done some poo, you need to clean it up to prevent that. Sometimes it's because of poor diet or undigested food products going through their system, so then you might have to review what the dog is eating. And if he's eating stuff that's not breaking down, it's coming at the other end, and it's still half broken down, so he eats it again.
Right.
And that's why, again, making sure your dog has a balanced diet will prevent these sorts of things from happening. They're not going to get really necessarily sick from it, but if they start eating other dogs' poos and other animals' poos, they could ingest worms and things that you don't want to go through their system.
Right.
That's why you shouldn't let your dog, or a dog, lick your face. You don't know where he's been.
That's true, and a lot of us probably do that every day.
And, of course, that brings us to another subject called zoonotic diseases, which is any disease that's transmitted from dog to human. So these diseases can be in the form of worms, intestinal worms, and pretty nasty things. So the key really is prevention. That means always being hygienically conscious when you're dealing with your dogs.
Yes. Basil, another question that's really relates to my own experience, and I know a lot of dog owners have this as well, is a dog that runs away from home. I have a Bichon Frise,
yep,
12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's, I think, a reasonably well-trained dog. Probably doesn't get enough walking outside.
Right.
The minute the door's open, she's out the door and gone.
Okay. What happens is, because dogs learn by association experience, it takes one of these experiences to happen, and the dog finds that as a positive thing. So let's say the first time, when would be the first time you recall that this ever happened?
That would be a number of years ago, when she was probably about 3 years old, I think.
Okay. And when she did run out, where did she go?
Not far, about two doors up.
Yep.
Just sniffed someone's garden, basically.
Right. And then what did she do after that? Did she come back or?
No, we had to go and get her.
Okay, and what was she? She was just quite happily sniffing?
Yes, very, very settled there, yep, and happy.
Okay. Again, it's because dogs enjoy being outside of that one environment, as soon as they get an they're opportunists, and they will go off and they will have a sniff because that's what they do. Now, if she doesn't come back immediately, it just simply means that maybe you didn't train her enough to respond to your commands. Or you may have said to her, "Come back here, you naughty dog, come back." And that sort of growly sound, and that is actually quite a negative to a dog, and the dog will end up getting further away from you. But all it takes is that one experience, and the dog thinks, great, I had a fantastic time when I ran out.
Right.
I sniffed all these things. I played with the dog next door. I got fed by this person down the street. I knocked over this rubbish bin and grabbed all the food. And all these things can happen. And so when the dog gets, you know, put back inside the backyard, it could be a bit mundane for the dog in the backyard, and so waits for another opportunity to get out again. And so the way to prevent that is to, first of all, be aware where your dog is. When you're opening doors, but also teach it. I'll come down to this time and time again, you'll notice, Anthony, is obedience. Tell him to stay. He's not allowed to get out when you open the door. Close the door and release him and say, finish. That means he can get up now from his stay. Or you teach the dog not to rush out by cracking the door open when he's inside the house, for example, just about 5 centimetres, closing the door again. Opening, closing, opening, closing. Repeat this and then go back and sit down inside. And so therefore you change that associational perception the dog has that the door opens and it gets a chance to rush out. In fact, all that happens is the door opens and it closes again and you go back and sit down. He'll give up in the end.
Well, you're right, Basil. You keep coming back to this basic obedience training. Is that something the average dog owner can do at home or should they really be seeking expert help?
Look, they can. I mean, the majority of people can teach the dog some very basic things, but in a lot of cases also, they do need to get some expert help. And that's where we'd recommend people to go to a professional dog trainer and seek that assistance. I mean, there's good trainers, there's bad trainers. What they need to do is see which trainers are members of reputable organisations. We're members of the Australian Association of Professional Dog Trainers, and which means that we have to get an accreditation each year in terms of the way we operate. Not just simply our training methods, but also our customer service, our insurances, all those sorts of things have to be up to scratch and so on. So yeah, so the pet dog owner needs to really source out some professional trainers in their area.
And exactly what would, well, not exactly, but briefly, what would be covered in the basic obedience training?
Is that, our basic obedience program is a short course of 8 weeks, and also we have a 10-week course. In the course, the dogs learn social walking, so there's no pulling on leash when they walk them. They learn to come back when they're called. They sit at the heel, which is level with your left leg. They drop on command with a hand signal. They do sit, stay and drop stays, up to 5 metres distance for a minute with distractions, plus also interaction and sociability training with the other dogs and handlers. So in real life situations, when you're walking a dog down the street, the dog is still responding to you. Plus also we help them with problem solving in that course. It's all structured, which means there's a clear outcome at each session. They receive training notes and handouts, so they know what they have to practice. And then we also guarantee our programs that they will achieve those outcomes, provided, of course, they practice as well. Daily practice of 5 to 10 minutes goes a long way.
Basil, you mentioned walking on a leash. How could someone start that at home? Like, what equipment would they need? There's choker chains and all types of leashes.
Yeah, look, correction collars or commonly called choker chains, they're okay, but if they're not used correctly, there's no point in putting it on. A lot of people expect that, okay, well, we'll put this chain on and the dog will choke himself and then he'll stop. Well, in fact, that's not the way it's intended to be used. The idea of a correction collar is that the collar stays loose, and when the dog starts to forge ahead, the handler has to stop, say no, because the dog has learned by a voice command, and then give the chain a slight tug back before it tightens. So it's the sound of the chain and also the sudden taking up of that slack that corrects the dog back, and then the dog gets praised for stopping, and then you continue on. That's one approach. The other approach is to use a head halter. There's a number of products on the market. There's the Halti, which is the in Dunbar brand. There's the Black Dog training halter, which is made locally in Australia, or it's actually distributed, I should say, locally in Australia. There's also, which is what we use, there's also the Gentle Leader, which is another form of head halters. And you slip that over the top of the dog's muzzle and around its neck, and you clip it on. And it's like a horse with a bridle. You control the dog from the muzzle. And the idea is not to jerk the leash, because you can actually injure the dog's neck. But just as the dog starts to forge ahead, you stop and gently draw the leash in towards you at the dog's nose height. The dog has to turn and look at you and stops as a consequence. Some dogs don't like that, and they'll start trying to fight to get it off their muzzle. So it's a case of working out what is best suited for that particular dog.
And again, commitment, patience, and
And understanding.
And understanding.
Mm, absolutely.
Because these things aren't going to be taught overnight.
No, that's right. People have to have patience as well. That's right.
Okay. Basil, there's often people have a question bringing a second pet home. There's some concern when they've bought a dog. They may already have a dog at home or a cat.
Yep.
Is there anything that they can do that can make that experience a happier one for animals and humans?
All right. If they have an older dog, and let's presume this dog has been quite okay with dogs in the past, it shouldn't really be a great issue. Also, if this dog has, had some obedience training and is quite clear in terms of the owner being the leader in the household and it being at the bottom of the pecking order, it's not going to be an issue. The way to do it would be to introduce these dogs outside of the home environment into a neutral area like a local park on lead, and then let them meet, let them have a sniff of each other, and then walk them together and then walk them home. When you get home, make sure nothing changes with the previous dog that you had. Like, don't overwhelm that older dog with extra affection that you normally would, because then that sends a signal to that dog that, oh, you're next in line. And therefore, you'll end up with fights, because that dog will then see the other young dog as a threat. If you simply treat them as equals, you don't have those problems.
And if there is some snarling and snapping between two dogs, should you just stand back and let them sort it out?
Never. That's an absolute misnomer. Absolute misnomer. Absolutely not. No, you're the pack leader. You step in there and you sort both these dogs out, correct them, reprimand them, and give them time out. And don't tolerate that nonsense from them.
Okay, well, that's a very important point. Because I've seen a lot of owners myself introducing their dogs to another dog. And, I mean, their thinking is, I've got to sort it out. One of them will become the pack leader.
No, absolutely not. You just don't allow that. Sometimes what will happen is the dogs will start fighting and they'll injure themselves, and you could end up with some serious injuries. No, you shouldn't allow that at all. Not don't tolerate it.
Okay. Basil, is there any travel tips you could suggest for someone taking their dog on a holiday, possibly?
By aircraft or just in the back of the car?
Well, both really. Probably by the car is the most common method, but.
Yep. Okay, well, let's presume your dog doesn't get car sick for a start. But what you need to do is to make it quite safe for the dog. So when he's in the back seat of the car, if it's just a sedan, you need to harness the dog in and clip that harness onto a seatbelt. A lot of people tend to, you know, as drivers or passengers of vehicles, we clip ourselves in, but we forget about our dogs. And if you hit the brakes and that dog's flying around for a start, apart from injuring himself, it could be quite lethal in the passengers inside because this dog's flying around. So you need to harness the dog in. If you've got, say, a four-wheel drive or a wagon of some sort, you can get one of those grills put in, which is sensational because, for a start, it means the dog's not going to come in onto the front seat, and the dog is quite secure in the back and he can move around. And if you really wanted to make it even safer, you would also harness the dog into the back as well.
Okay. Terrific. Well, we're about to wind up. There's just two other issues I'd just like you to briefly tell us a bit about, and that's a dog who's chewing, maybe possibly furniture or whatever he can get his teeth on, or a dog digging holes out the backyard, which is a common problem for people.
Yeah, certainly. Look, these are two common problems that we have with people ringing us up. And, again, we have to address three particular issues. One, has the dog had obedience training? Because, you know, that way, that's a good outlet for him, for a start. And we know the owner understands the dog, and the dog understands the owner. Secondly, does the dog get regular exercise? And if he doesn't, then that needs to be addressed. Thirdly, companionship inside. But also, you need to look at the dog toys from the chewing aspect. If the dog is chewing everything and anything, it's become a habit for it, because it's either doesn't have the appropriate chew toys to chew, and it finds other things to it's obviously destroyed. Some good dog toys out there would be the Kong toy, which is a pretty well indestructible toy. And there's also another product that we use called the Aussie Dog Toys, which are really, really virtually indestructible. If people give their dogs too many toys, you know, some people say, well, I've got a lot of toys, you know, he's got 10, 12 toys. But the dog gets bored with them, so what we recommend is that they remove all those toys and simply place three of those toys back in there to play with and rotate them around every day.
Right.
So a couple of simple things that people can do. Digging, do dogs dig again because of boredom? But sometimes people give the dogs a bone, and then they leave for work. So the dog goes, oh, I'll take this and I'll put it somewhere for later, because they've got a full tummy, so it's surplus food. You end up with dogs digging holes to bury their bones. So then if that's the case, don't give the dog a bone that it can just take and bury. Either tie him up so he can't do that, let him chew it all and then get rid of it, or give him stuff that he can't, he will actually be able to chew and swallow, such as lamb's neck, chicken wings, chicken carcasses, all good for their teeth, but generally the dogs will just eat them up as a meal. Other reasons why dogs dig, one of the things you can do to stop a dog digging is to bury its feces in the hole, because generally the dogs don't want to dig that up, and that's a quick way of stopping that behaviour. So these are just some simple tips that people can do, apart from regular walks, of course.
As we mentioned, those fresh bones for dogs, what about cooked bones?
No, never cook bones. That's an absolute no-no, because as soon as you cook a bone, it becomes brittle. Now, the dog may be able to chew it, but what he's done, he's broken a bit of this brittly bone off, he swallowed it, and he's got sharp edges, and somewhere along the gut, it could get caught and rip the gut lining, and I've known of cases where dogs have had severe internal bleeding because of that.
Right. And Basil, we've covered a lot of ground today. I think there's a lot of help out there now for people who have dog problems. Would you mind just recapping some of the important points for somebody who's really about to get a new dog, whether it's a pup or an older dog?
Certainly. Okay, first of all, there's a cost factor. Dogs will cost you money. There's vet bills, there's food bills, there's training. There's all these things that people have to consider. You don't just buy a dog and that's the end of it. Also, they have to have training of some sort, because they need that guidance, they need that leadership, otherwise you'll end up with an unruly, destructive dog that you don't want. Next thing is to give that dog also regular walks, give it a good diet, a balanced diet, and just ensure that the dog is getting regular contact with people and other dogs. And if you do all that, you'll end up with a great companion.
And Basil, for people out there who'd like to visit your website, would you just mind letting them know your web address, please?
Yes, certainly. Our web address is www.dogtraining.com.au.
And just once again, please?
Yes, www.dogtraining.com.au.
So I'd like to thank Basil for sharing his great knowledge and expertise today on dog training. And I'll say goodbye to you now, Basil, and thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Anthony. It was my pleasure.
That brings us to an end to this audio program titled Dog Training Secrets Revealed. Congratulations on this big step to improving your experience of being a dog owner. This audio was recorded to provide understanding and effective management of many of the common dog behavior problems that you may come across as a dog owner. I hope you have gained some valuable knowledge and will now be more confident in tackling or even preventing these problems in the first place. Remember though, for any training to be successful, it will require some commitment, patience and consistency. Thank you for your time, and I wish you good luck in all your dog endeavors. Goodbye.